providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're now shifting our focus pretty much primarily to the precious metals as we are chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner over at the CPM Group. Now, Jeff, you recently sent out a video to everyone on the CPM Group's news list or email list that talked about ending irrational fears and expectations in gold and silver. The part that I want to pick out of that video and focus on is more your long-term outlook for gold. Look, gold has gone through a great run in 2019 and the whole way up to about 2020 to even 2022 this year when it did touch above 2000 again. However, gold has pretty much been under pressure. We're coming up to another monthly close early this next week and a lot of people looking at around that 1750 level. Either way, gold has dropped, I believe it's 5 months in a row, looking at a potential of 6 months in a row. But that's more short-term outlook. In the longer-term aspect of it, though, Jeff, what is your outlook? Are you broadly bullish, or do you think the bear market is really taking control here and gold could also be suffering from a more prolonged pullback?
Yeah, you know, we CPM Group lives in many worlds. And in one world, people look at intraday highs and lows, and in another part of the world, people look at, you know, monthly, annual, quarterly and annual averages and longer term trends. And from a short term perspective, we still think that the gold and silver markets are under short term pressure in August into September because of our economic expectations in terms of interest rates, inflation, overall economic activity and political developments. So we think on a short-term basis that these things are still vulnerable. And yeah, as you said, we're talking before Jackson Hole. On a longer-term basis, we are still very much bullish on gold and to a probably a lesser extent on silver, you know, more so on gold because we see it more as quasi-money. Well, we don't see it more as quasi-money and financial asset. The world looks at gold and silver and says gold is more of a quasi-money and a financial asset than is silver. And the world acts accordingly. You know, our expectation is that the upward move that you talked about from the middle of 2019, it really into March of 2022. You know, it peaked in August of 2020 and came down and it's been trading sideways. We see that as the first leg of a much longer term upward move. And, you know, we saw the price move, more than $700 in that first leg up from 2019 into 2020. And our view is we've been consolidating pretty much above 1680 ever since then. And that at some point, the gold price will probably move out of that consolidation range into and move up again, and you might see another $700 move. You know, and if you take $1,700 as a base and you add $700 to it, that's $2,400. So as a possible target, but that may not occur for several years, in our view, and it's going to depend on how the world reacts to economic what those economic developments are in the long run, and how the world reacts to them. So, you know, we're still long-term bullish on gold and on silver, but we don't necessarily see them running away yet this year. We do think they'll start moving higher. Now, one other thing I want to talk about, you know, it's funny because, yeah, if you look at it on an intraday basis, yeah, the price has been down for 5 months. If you look at it on an annual or quarterly basis, gold is close to record levels or at record levels. You know, the average price for gold through July this year has been $1,850. The annual average price has never been that high. The highest annual average price was last year when it was $1,799. So we're at record levels in terms of year-to-date prices compared to any other year. And if you look at the charts that we look at, you can sort of say, okay, yes, And those charts are available on our YouTube videos, I should say. And we did a video talking about these things just Tuesday of, the 23rd of August. If you look at charts that we look at, you can say, okay, we went from $270 in 2001 to $1,900 in 2011. We came down, we had this long, broad consolidation phase from 2013 into 2019. That consolidation phase, that was a cyclical decline in the context of a larger secular upward move. And if you think about that move from 270 to 1900 as the first leg of a measured move, think of 2013 to 2019 as the consolidation phase, and it consolidated above $1,200. So it consolidated at record levels. And then it started moving higher in 2019 in what we think of as the second leg of an even broader, bigger upward move in gold prices, which is going to relate to financial, economic, and political developments in the world. So we're looking at the period from early 2020 till now, and we're saying the gold price has basically been consolidating between $1,700 and $1,900, a couple spikes down to $1,680, $1,650, a couple spikes up over $2,000, but basically consolidating most of the last 3 years between $1,700 and $1,900. And we think this is another consolidation phase. It has further to go, but then at some point it breaks out, and it will most likely break out to the upside.
Well, Jeff, it is interesting to look at things in different time frames and to look at different time frames on charts, because you're right. When you look at the daily charts or the hourly charts, it's easy to get stuck in the noise. And I think that's probably why some precious metals investors feel like gold or silver are struggling. But when you put it in terms of annualized price and just how things have been trending higher, you could make the argument that gold has done its job. It has reacted to inflation. It has reacted to some economic chaos, whether it was the pandemic or the war in Ukraine, et cetera. And it actually has been there as a hedge against a weakening economy. So is that how you're looking at it, that in the secular bull market, as it plays out, that you can't really get stuck in the daily noise, but you kind of have to zoom back a little bit to take in the bigger picture and see how gold is reacting to the larger macroeconomic trends?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, I sometimes say I like trout fishing, you know, where you just have to wait for a long, long time before the trout bite, you know. But, you know, in terms of gold and inflation, gold actually kind of preacted to inflation. You know, gold prices rose from the middle of 2019 into the middle of 2020, and inflation didn't start picking up until the second quarter of 2021. So, you know, I wouldn't say that necessarily gold was preacting to inflation, but I would say that gold was reacting and responding to a variety of economic and political and social crises, including the pandemic, which ultimately led to the inflation that we are seeing now. That and the government responses to the pandemic and everything led to the inflation that we're experiencing now, you know. So, yeah, you know, I often advise our investment clients and my family and myself that, you know, the best investment is an investment that you can have and you can put it away and you don't have to think about it. And then, you know, every so often you look at it and you say, wow, that's gone up. You look at Berkshire Hathaway, they trade in and out of stock. But there's a core of investments like Coca-Cola. I think they've owned Coca-Cola for something like 40 years now. You know, it's like, yeah, we might trade around it, but this is a long-term investment, and gold is the ultimate long-term investment.
Now, that's an important way to look at gold too, right? Because investors, they've been looking for, I think, some outsized moves, some quicker moves up to some much higher levels to make money more quickly. And that's sometimes what we hear with some of these gold bugs, especially the gold's going to 3,000, 5,000, 10,000. Where does your measured move actually bring us to then? Put it all in context. Give us an actual number of where this measured move, even if it doesn't come right now, where it could go to.
Yeah, we just completed our quarterly update. We do long-term 10-year projections for gold and silver, supply, demand, and price. And we just completed this week our long-term gold report, you know, we're looking at a nominal price that would peak around $2,600 an ounce. $2,579 is the computed price in our model. You know, so
Jeff, in all fairness, at that level, that doesn't get that many investors excited about it. I realize it's a buy and hold, but think of the moves that people are seeing in other markets. To me, that sort of a move, while good for investors in the space, doesn't necessarily draw in a large number of other investors.
Actually, it does draw in a lot of investors, and it is actually a really good return compared to other competing assets. What it doesn't do is it doesn't satisfy the people who have these irrational faith-based beliefs that gold's going to $3,000 or $10,000, that the international currency regime system is going to collapse, that the government's going to call in your dollars, you know, that they're going to round up minorities and put us all in concentration camps. It doesn't fulfill those dreams of people who have these faith-based beliefs that the world's going to collapse and gold's going to $10,000. What it does do is it provides a very healthy competitive return for assets in gold compared to other assets in stocks and bonds and other investments. So, you know, you find a lot of rational, fact-based, reality-oriented investors saying $2,500 sounds like an incredibly high price. And if I look at it on a compounded annual return, even from today's, you know, $1,790, that's a very good return over the next 3 to 5 years. I'm interested in gold. The other guys, you know, hey, you know, I've been told by my guru that the gold price is going to $10,000 for 40 years. What do you know, Jeff? Well, I know that for 40 years it hasn't gone to $10,000.
Well, Jeff, in that context where gold would make a move to $2,500, $2,600, I think that would be a solid move for the yellow metal. The question would be, would that drag silver along for the ride? Because often silver correlates with gold pretty well. I realize it's a different metal and it's got an industrial component to it, but it seems like around the periphery, what would drive these higher is investment demand. So just curious what you think silver would do in that kind of environment if gold made that kind of move.
Yeah, again, you have to differentiate between intraday spikes and, you know, annual average prices. It's quite possible that silver would outperform gold at times during the next 5 years or three to five years on an intraday basis. We think that silver on an annual or quarterly annual basis probably lags gold, and it has over the last several years. You know, gold hit a peak in 2011, it came down, it hit a new peak in 2020 and 2022. Silver hit a peak in 2011, 2012, came down. It has risen, but it hasn't gotten close to its previous peak, either on an intraday basis or an annual or quarterly average basis. Our view is that silver probably will lag gold. I mentioned earlier, if you go around the world and you talk to people about safe haven assets, you know, what are the assets you run to when the earth starts trembling? The two things that people say all the time are gold and the U.S. dollar. Silver comes up sometimes, but not nearly as often. And a lot of people who say gold, when you say, well, what about silver, they kind of scrunch up their faces. You know, so the reality is that while silver tends to move in conjunction with gold, it's got like a 75-80% correlation statistically in terms of monthly price changes. While it tends to move in conjunction broadly with gold, we think that gold will outperform silver over the next 3 to 5 years.
So, Jeff, since you brought up the dollar, let's talk about the relationship between currencies and gold. If you have this longer-term bullish outlook for gold, does that mean the dollar falls? Does the dollar also benefit? Because right now we've seen the dollar definitely pressuring commodities broadly.
The dollar doesn't necessarily fall. You know, the correlation between gold and the dollar month-to-month changes is like negative 30%. And there are periods of time when they both rise together, like 1978, 1979. And the future of the dollar will depend on what the U.S. government does. It has the capacity to keep the dollar strong and to keep the dollar as the de facto reserve currency of choice, both in the private investment sector and on the central bank sector. However, I'm not sure that the U.S. government has the political willpower or the U.S. people have the political willpower to do what happens. I mean, if you go back to the period in 1993 to 2000, you saw the U.S. bring in some very good actuarialists to the IRS, and they increased taxes and fees on U.S. government services. And they took the federal deficit, which was about $320, $350 billion a year in 1992, 1993, and they turned it into a surplus for 4 years. And they paid down $1 trillion of federal debt during that period of time. They got rid of the 30-year bond for a while because they didn't think it was going to be needed. And if you look at that period of time, the dollar rose sharply. It was kind of flat from 1993 to 1995, but then it rose sharply. And people and central banks around the world said, look at what the U.S. government and the U.S. economy are doing. And that's what we need. I mean, the Chinese government and the People's Bank of China at the U.S. government's ability to, with marginal changes in the tax base and marginal changes in government spending, it was able to turn a $300 billion deficit into a surplus and start paying down the debt. And it's very important. They didn't pay off the debt. They just started paying it down. And when you show the world that you can, in fact, pay down the debt with marginal changes in your tax code, all of a sudden people want your currency. And the People's Bank of China and the Chinese government said, we need an economy like that. And they started implementing policies, or they accelerated implementing policies to try to liberalize their economy and open up certain markets. And they started the process of creating the China Investment Corp. Prior to this, they had simply hoarded dollars in the People's Bank of China against currency market unrest and economic chaos on a global basis. How do you prepare for that? You have a lot of money stashed to cover your costs during economic chaotic periods. After watching the U.S. government in the 90s, the Chinese government and governments around the world in the Middle East, in Southeast Asia, in East Asia, in Europe, parts of Europe, started creating sovereign wealth funds and said, we need to not just have a hoard of currencies as insurance, we also need to invest in our infrastructure, and we define infrastructure to include our industrial base. Now, this China Investment Corp wasn't actually monetized until December of 2007 because central banks work very methodically. But, you know, the idea that there should be a China Investment Corp was spawned in the mid to late 1990s.
Well, Jeff, it's an interesting notion because right now the United States is a pretty far cry from where it was during that time period and where China was during that time period. I mean, we do see the Fed that's supposed to be initiating their quantitative tightening where they're going to start reducing their balance sheet. And we did see a bill come out of the Biden administration, the Inflation Reduction Act. But ironically, it's spending $700 to $800 billion to try to reduce inflation, which is new money creation usually feeds the fires of inflation, not reduces it. But they are getting intense on the tax collection part of that, beefing up the IRS. Do you think these are the kind of steps that would have to be taken even more aggressively to get that long-term confidence in the U.S. dollar continuing as a reserve? And do you see any threats to the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency on the horizon?
So, yeah, first, these are baby steps forward. And they're baby steps that are limited by the lack of political will, both on the part of our elected officials and our voters. We need to do more. Second thing is, in terms of fighting inflation, you mentioned something that's very important. Everybody focuses on interest rates and monetary policy and the Fed's policy of monetary accommodation and interest rates. But most of the inflationary problems that we're facing right now and over the last 18 months have been fueled by fiscal policy run by the Congress and the administration, and by supply side issues, which actually are exacerbated inflationarily by higher interest rates. So it's a very complex issue. We have the capacity to do this. I just don't know that we have the political will. Now, the biggest risk to the dollar is that the government and the United States as a whole do not do that. We are facing increased competition on a global basis in terms of economic power and political power and military power. We need to have a more rational approach to facing that competition. We did at one point where we were saying, it's okay to compete. Let's cooperate while we compete. And now we've pivoted over the last 20 years to a much more hostile approach to rising economies. And that's a bad thing to do. It's bad for our country and our economy, and it's also bad for the world. We need increased cooperation, and that is not in the cards. That said, you do have the rise of other countries economically, and you have not seen that reflected in the rise of those countries' currencies on a monetary basis. So the amount of money that central banks have that they hold, the percentage of their monetary reserves that they hold in dollars, is largely the same as it was in 1990. Yeah, they haven't really made a wholesale, let's move away from the dollar. And the same is true on a private sector basis. The amount of wealth in the world that is held in dollars has actually increased over the last 30 years, not decreased. The dollar has the capacity to decline. The risk is not so much outside competition from other currencies. The risks, the major risks to the dollar's future status are domestic U.S. policies and voter attitudes toward the collective well-being.
One of those, look within, not without, isn't it, Jeff, in terms of what could drive the dollar and the faith in the dollar. Interesting stats on the wealth held in the dollar, but again, look at how much money has been printed, but that's been in a lot of different countries. Jeff, before we get you out of here, look, you consult with a lot of very focused investors within the resource sector and also groups that just start to get some more information on precious metals especially. What's your assessment of the overall interest in the sector? What can you share with us in terms of who's coming to you looking for research? Who's coming to you looking for consulting? And what's their general attitude to the sector?
Let me preface that by saying that last night I heard that Julian Robertson, who had created and ran Tiger Management, passed away. And he was just a wonderful client, wonderful person to work with, incredibly intelligent, fact-based, reason-based person. And he passed away at 90. And I guess I'm in grouchy mood today, partly because I'm very sad about that. Now, in terms of living institutional investors and their managers, we're seeing that a lot of the companies that have been natural resource based or gold based for some time that were getting interested in gold actually when the price was down. You know, we started seeing interest in the period, say, 2016 to 2019, before the gold price and silver price started rising, because a lot of these guys are value investors. And they say, wait a second, the gold price was $1,800. You know, I guess the annual price back in 2011 was probably something on the order of $1,600. And now, you know, by 2017, the price was off $300 or so on an annual average basis, and even more on a shorter-term basis. And so people start saying, okay, you know, gold's down. It's been down for several years. Does it make sense to start buying? And we started seeing a rejuvenation of interest in gold and silver by these institutional investors, high net worth individuals, family offices, really starting to emerge probably around 2016, 2017. And then obviously it picked up steam in 2019 and 2020. And now there's some hesitance. At the same time, you've seen a number of institutional, high net worth individuals, family office, and retail investors come to gold and silver for the first time. And, you know, they got very thrilled when the price was rising late 2019, 2020, into 2021. And there's some disappointment on that, on those people's points right now. And unfortunately, you see that. Right now, a lot of people are in the observation phase. They're still interested in gold and silver on a theoretical basis, a hypothetical basis, but some of that early enthusiasm is gone, and they're sort of gathering their breath and they're doing their homework. I mean, our business is up sharply this year as any number of people said, wait a second, gold and silver are much more nuanced than the stuff that got me interested in 2019, 2020, 2021. I need to buy some really good quality research and advice and get really concrete information about gold and silver and how they interact with the markets and the global economy and what's a reasonable thing to expect. And so you're seeing a lot of people studying gold right now that haven't necessarily deployed assets.
All right, Jeff, we'll wrap it up here. Very interesting. Maybe some of these people move into the sector. Maybe they go away. Who knows? But one thing is for sure that they will follow price too. So if you are right and we can get a breakout, even if it is in a couple of years, just say above 2100, that will bring in some more money. It's again, just kind of a sticking point since we have reached a top right around the same price over the last couple of years. And investors are slowly, I think, maybe losing a little bit of faith, saying, can that level break? Thing is, it very well could if everything plays out the way that you are saying. Everyone, thank you for tuning in on this weekend show. We'll be back with you next week. As always, keep in touch with us through email. Our emails are fleck@kereport.com and chat@kereport.com. We love hearing what you guys think of the markets, companies we're bringing on, and any companies you think we should feature on the show. Jeff, thank you again for your time. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.